Welcome back to Forecasting Innovation, a podcast by Humidsat with Chief Scientist Paolo Ruti and myself, Christina Bonanati, Earth Scientist and Science Communicator. Humidsat is Europe's operational satellite agency for monitoring weather, climate and the environment from space. Let's explore the frontiers of technology in satellite operations and weather science. In the first episode, we spoke about the cyclical nature of technical innovation. For the upcoming part, I've been speaking with Humidsat's Chief Scientist Paolo Ruti and Florence Rabier, Director General at the European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecast, about the advances of machine learning and weather prediction.
Why the surge of machine learning weather prediction now? I think there are probably three main reasons. First of all, the large availability of structured data, we call them reanalysis. And this large amount of data that has been made available through Copernicus projects in Europe to the international community is a very good baseline of high quality data. The second element is the high computational capacity of these machine learning methods, especially using new instruments or new GPUs that have been developed in the last few years. And so machine learning world leverages on parallel computing. And this is why it's important, the connection between the structure of these neural networks and how those algorithms work and the GPUs. And the third element is, of course, the progress in deep learning algorithms that were especially from the image treatment of speech treatment that weren't there 15 years ago.
Certainly, machine learning, deep learning, and other infrastructure changes are going to be really fundamental and completely a disruptive change, in particular deep learning, for the future of numerical weather prediction, which is what we're doing at ECMWF. Because it's so disruptive, it's of course very difficult to imagine what the future will be in a few years' time or even a decade or two.
Let's explore how machine learning works in the context of weather prediction and where in the weather prediction value chain it can make an impact. Traditional weather forecasting systems rely on physical models, comprising millions of equations, attempting to accurately represent the complex phenomena in the atmosphere and other Earth systems, such as flow of energy, air or water, incorporating factors like temperature, pressure, humidity and wind speed. For numerical weather prediction, these physics equations are then translated, that means manually coded, into computer algorithms. Machine learning, on the other hand, uses statistical and probabilistic relationships learned from the data itself to make predictions. There are numerous complex steps required to transform raw weather data into actionable forecasts. But now, let's first start with machine learning. Paolo, how does it work?
Machine learning is based on a neural network type, which mimics the way our human brain operates. It consists, if you want, of layers of interconnected nodes, like neurons in our brain, and each of which processes input data by performing very simple computation and then passing the results to the next layer and so forth. In a neural network, you have a lot of interconnections and you have a lot of layers. And you have an initial input layer, and then at the end you have hidden layers, and then you have at the end an output layer. And you are trying to set the weights across all these layers, featuring how to best learn from the data respect to a target. So you have a target, and you are setting all these weights of these layers, starting from the output layer, in order to minimize the difference respect to a specific target.
Imagine we want to use a neural network to analyze satellite images and identify different cloud types. We start by feeding data to the neural network, thousands of satellite images that are each labeled with names of the different cloud types. Now training starts. The neural network learns from these data. It analyzes each image by looking for patterns and features like the shape, texture, or arrangement of clouds. To improve its performance, the neural network compares its predictions with the target, the actual labels. To minimize errors, the system gradually adjusts its internal weights. These are the parameters that govern how it processes and interprets the input data. As training progresses, the neural network learns to generalize its understanding, recognizing clouds, even in varying weather conditions or lightning. The more data and the more diverse the data are, the better the model will be trained. Now, of course, understanding satellite images is not what we mean when we talk about AI-based weather prediction models. Global atmospheric and ocean circulation patterns are much more complex. We can understand this when looking at the concept of waves in the atmosphere.
Everybody experiences waves in our day-to-day life. When you go to the sea or when you throw a stone into a lake, you can observe those disturbances propagating at the surface, or you can recognize waves into the cloud pattern. Waves, especially in the atmosphere, but not only, also far away into the deep space, they are basically an effect of a perturbation and a restoring force. So you perturb the system, so you perturb the surface of the water, and then you have a force that is trying to restore the system to the previous state, to the equilibrium. And this is what's happening in the atmosphere, where on a very large scale, you have the rotation effect of the Earth, and this is experienced through a force, which is the Coriolis force, which is our restoring force in this case. And you can have those large scale waves that are restored, and they try to restore the equilibrium. And you can experience this when you are flying across the Pacific or across the Atlantic, because you have the meandering of the jet stream respect to these very large scale waves that have the size of a continent even. Then you have shorter waves that you can observe in nature, looking to a tempest or a big storm that is traveling from the east coast of US to the west coast of Europe across the Atlantic. And those are, again, waves that represent an instability of the atmosphere, and they have also the properties to try to find an equilibrium between different restoring force or energy that you throw into the atmospheric system. Or you can have waves when you have big hurricanes over the tropics, and you can have these very big convections that go up to 10 kilometers, even more, into the atmosphere. And then this perturbation is generating waves that they emanate from the tropics, and they travel towards the mid-latitudes, so they connect tropics and mid-latitudes.
Now, how are these atmospheric waves linked to the machine learning models used for weather prediction?
So, waves carry information from place to place, and I think this is important into the atmosphere, so they connect points that are far away each other. Or if you are thinking to these big waves from the tropics to the mid-latitudes, or the large meandering of the jet, or they can connect points that are 500 kilometers apart if you're considering a storm. And then you have, of course, other waves or instability that are even shorter. When you have a large neural network, the neural network will learn from a large amount of data how this information is connected from one point of the atmosphere to another. So this is the initial essential element of a learning process from a machine learning weather prediction system.
To better understand this concept, let's use one example of a machine learning-based weather forecast model, GraphCast, from Google DeepMind.
This is basically based on a graph neural network, so is building a mesh around the Earth as a graph network. And so you have different nodes collecting weather information from other nodes. And this is a multi-mesh structure. So you have a few nodes that propagate information from far away, and then you have many nodes that propagate the information locally. And so the training will, of course, provide the basic information for these nodes to learn how this information is connected and it propagates.
For the image processing example we had in the beginning, the machine learning model uses millions of pictures to learn from. For weather prediction, we need data that represent these atmospheric waves and physically based weather patterns we just talked about. Which data do machine learning-based weather prediction models such as GraphCast use for their training?
In our community, we have been mastering data and the capacity to describe the atmospheric status and also the ocean status, the land surface status, using the best knowledge of physics we have nowadays. and transforming this best knowledge, benefiting to understand how the equation of fluids work, and translating all these into mathematical codes that are run in a computer. And they're able to use all type of observations, satellites, ground-based observations, observations from airplanes, and to integrate all this information that are sparse, diverse, into regular parameters in regular grids covering the full planet with specific temperature, wind, humidity data covering all the planet for different layers. So from the surface up to 20 kilometers into the atmosphere. And this is what we call analysis. And when we rerun these for a long time period using the same type of model or code, we call them reanalysis. And this is the richest source of information that up to now has been used by machine learning models into the learning training process.
So I assume that when it comes to reanalysis data used in weather prediction models, we're not talking about observations dating back to Aristotle's times. Is there a limit to the quality of historical data? How far back in history do these used weather prediction data extend?
In the weather prediction history, of course, there's a long time series going back using instruments back to the 19th, 18th century. But what we have seen is major development of shared measurement around the world after Second World War, which means that we have the possibility to replicate, to reproduce what happened into the atmosphere with a certain degree of certainty since the 50s, 60s. And so we have at least 40, 50, 60 years of this information available.
Reanalysis. It's like having a detailed weather report from every corner of the globe for the past 40 years. It doesn't just rely on actual historical data. It also fills in the gaps and corrects errors to give us a complete and precise snapshot of Earth weather and physical conditions at any given moment. Now, to get a deeper understanding of how machine learning is used in weather prediction, let's beam to one of Europe's largest supercomputer complexes and the world's largest archive of numerical weather prediction data, the European Center for Medium-Range Weather Forecasts. Here, these climate reanalyses are developed. For example, the latest one called ERA 5 that dates back to the 1940s and covers everything from Earth temperature to ocean currents. Florence Rabier, ECMWF's Director General, spoke with me about the role machine learning plays in weather prediction currently and potentially in the future, and the different roles it plays throughout the weather prediction value chain.
Machine learning for sure will play an important part in modeling, weather forecasting, and possibly climate modeling in the future. Weather forecasting is actually more guaranteed than climate modeling, which is very much at the very cutting-edge research stage.
ECMWS reanalysis data are used to train the weather prediction machine learning models. How about vice versa? Can machine learning help to improve the reanalysis process?
In terms of reanalysis, maybe we have to be a bit careful to include too much machine learning in it, because we need really an independent set of data on which to build the models. So reanalysis for the time being is a combination of physical models and observations. And that is probably something very solid on which we need to rely in the future for the machine learning. So I would think that reanalysis for a while are still continue to be very much the classical way of doing it. On the other hand, you could think that there are going to be some bits of it that will be enhanced with machine learning. But I do not see machine learning playing a key change in the reanalysis. What is true is that the advent of machine learning models puts more pressure on the reanalysis of running them for a long time, using more and more observations, doing them at higher resolution, because at the moment they are really the foundation of machine learning models.
The availability of all the data from the last 40, 50 years made possible in the last 2 years the development of machine learning models capable to use all this data to run weather predictions for the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 days. This is extremely valuable, But in that specific case, all those machine learning models based on complex neural network structure, let's say they can be defined as an emulator. So they emulate what traditional weather prediction models do.
In terms of our processing on our NWP chain, I think we'll be able to ingest more data to do our forecast, and machine learning can play a role with that. Before, we run with just machine learning models or in parallel with our physical models. What is true is that we can also find a place for machine learning in some components of our forecast chain. So we can, for instance, accelerate some components of the model. For instance, some physical processes like radiation processes are very time consuming. They are very complicated. And if you can replace them with a machine learning emulator, you will accelerate the model. And this can be used in either forecast or reanalysis even. And similarly for climate modeling, we can probably accelerate some of the processes of the physical models. More ambitiously, we could start learning the equations and reproducing them. This will need some data from the past, but also some physical climate runs under different scenarios of, for instance, various trajectories of CO2. So this is something where we definitely want to proceed. I mean, we as a community, we are not at ECMWF in climate modeling ourselves, but I can see a path for it. What we are investigating in particular in the context of Destination Earth, when you run a climate model, you can't save every field at every time step. So you choose a frequency of post-processing of what you're going to save. And on the other hand, if some users want some data that fall in between the times we have saved, you could rerun quickly the model with the machine learning. So it's a sort of filling in the gaps in between model runs, also combining some of them. So there is definitely a range of possibilities for machine learning also in weather, but also in climate modeling. I also would like to talk about data monitoring, which is something very important that we do. We always compare observation and model to pinpoint some of the problems there can be. This is a very fine way of controlling the data quality, not just looking at the data quality on its own, but comparing with the model, because then you compare two sources of information, which have some different errors, but then seeing what starts becoming a bit unusual can let you know if it's a problem in the observation or in the model or something in between. For the time being, this is something that we've been doing a bit more manually or with some thresholds. We have so many instruments, we have so many satellites, so many channels in these instruments. A human cannot look at all the plots of time series of observation compared to model. It's just impossible now. This is what we used to do maybe 20 years ago, but this has been impossible for a while. So we had set up in operations a quality control data monitoring, which looks at anomalies in a sort of threshold way. So, you know, if it goes beyond this or if the bias builds up over time. But now what we've implemented a year ago is that we use machine learning to analyze this. So machine learning can alert us where there is a discrepancy, and it can also point to, do we think it's a satellite problem, the whole satellite going wrong, it's a channel problem, or it's a model problem in some parts of the atmosphere. So it can already not only pinpoint the problems or the trends, but also start to analyze and put the analyst person looking into it in the right direction of what do you think this is happening? What do you think is happening in the divergence maybe occasionally between data and model? So this is something we've already implemented, but of course we will work on fine-tuning it and improving it as usual.
As Florence mentioned, the evaluation of model errors and data monitoring needs an in-depth understanding of the observational data used. And I think this is one area where the collaboration between ECNWF and EUMETSAT is continuing. And I think there's a very good complementarity here in providing all the information ECNWF needs in terms of understanding what are the problems behind observations and the observational error aspects that are related to the instruments sitting in a satellite into the space looking down to the Earth.
But there's not only the medium range weather forecast, that means the forecast for the next 2 weeks for a specific area. There's a variety of different scales in time and space.
For the time being, we looked mainly at the medium range, so up to 2 weeks. But an important delivery of what we're producing is the extended range, monthly, going to the next month and even the seasonal prediction. And so we are going also to push the limits of machine learning models to go to this, what we call the extended range.
Another important area where the integration between different type of observations is extremely important is very short-term prediction, what is called in a technical language nowcasting. So you want to know what will happen next hour or next 2 hours. And in a specific region, when a storm is coming and there's very complex topography, you have valleys, and you want to understand what's going on because that could be disruptive precipitation with a lot of risk. And this is where traditionally you would have been just using radar data to observe what's coming and to infer. Nowadays, with machine learning, you can actually integrate easily radar data, satellite data, and other data from other sources like cars or drones, and you can try to make it becoming forecast tool which is powerful and can provide information which is extremely useful for people living there and to try to reduce or mitigate the risks.
There will also be a role of machine learning for downscaling maybe global reanalysis as well, but also some runs going into the future, using some observations or some of the runs that are run at fine resolution. Very importantly, we are starting to work also collaboratively with our member states and cooperating states. We have a project to work with them using the same code, but using the same tools and sharing experience. So in that way, we will expand together with the community of not only for the time being, we are running on regular grid, you know, mesh over the whole globe. Some of the member states are interested in having stretched model, where actually the grid, instead of being uniform over the globe, is actually finer over their area of interest, like Europe, obviously, or even their own country. So we are working with member states on how to implement stretched grids. They're also very interested in limited area models, and we see together how we can use the same tools and the same models at the same basis to implement these things that can be representing smaller scale that are very relevant for the shorter range that the member states are interested in. So this is not something we want to run ourselves, obviously, but we want to really work with the member states to develop this so that the community itself goes forward in this machine learning revolution, not just for global model, but for regional models, stretch grid, etc.
We would like to thank Florence Rabier and the European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecast for their contribution.
For medium-range weather prediction, all these can have a role. Estimating errors in the data simulation and in the forecast itself, replacing components or replacing the model altogether.
In the next episode of Forecasting Innovation, we will talk about the chaotic nature and instability of the atmosphere and how machine learning can address the greatest challenge in weather prediction. We will speak about the initial conditions and ensemble predictions.